It's optional. Hour number two rolls on here. Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. Don't forget to drive. Coming up next with Russell, Bear, Brandon, Rick. I think I've named them all. Hopefully they're all in today. So we'll see. But Nick Bromberg is going to be joining us here in just a second. It's NASCAR talk. Okay, so I might slip in a question about the draft at the end, but we're going NASCAR here. And we're breaking down Talladega this weekend. I want to talk about the ins and outs, what's going on with NASCAR, why things seem to be failing, whatever. We're going to talk about it now. We're just going to go back and forth on this. And Nick Bromberg joins us right now. What's up, buddy? How are you?
What's up? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. How was it been? Did you have a good weekend?
Hey, you know, whenever you get an off weekend without any football, any NASCAR, I try to take full advantage. So I did that. It was one of those fun Sundays where it was like 12 o'clock. I went, wait a second. This is kind of nice, you know?
There's nothing going on. This is great. Nothing to cover. Kind of
exactly.
Worked out.
Exactly. But then, you know what? When Talladega comes around on Sunday, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing than watching the race.
That's true. Exactly. I guess waiting for the big one, according to some fans. So it gets interesting. And you know what, Nick? We'll start it off, man. I've gone back and I've read different articles from you and a few other NASCAR writers in general, and we kind of hit on this last week. You know, somebody put out a piece about Richmond Speedway and fans coming to races now. And in my eyes, how big that is a problem for the sport if they're continuing to try to grow this thing, especially with Monster as a brand. If you look back on the last, let's take it for the first half of this season, everything that's gone on, all the races so far, Daytona, Atlanta, going out west, and where we stand now with Richmond and Bristol. What is your summary of the fan turnout in a sense of compared to maybe last season and the seasons before? Are people getting in too big of a pickle about actual fans attending compared to fans watching on TV? Where's the middle ground, bud?
You know, that's a great question. And I think you have to, with everything that has been done over the last 12 months in NASCAR, you have to kind of look at least what's happened through so far in 2019 through the prism of the changes that NASCAR made to the rules. And the reason you have to do that is because of these changes that NASCAR made to the cars were done within the context of trying to create more fan interest and create and get more people watching. You know, this is what our fans want. We're going to try to deliver what they want. And so you see viewership is up 2%, you know, which is not, granted, you would think a little, not the greatest or the most significant, I should say, but that's better than being down and being down like it had been over the last few years, where it just felt like a drop after drop after drop. But that's not really reflected in the grandstands. There's not a noticeable increase in attendance. I mean, Richmond, you have a track like that where it's cut capacity in recent years, and it's a fraction of what it was 10, 12 years ago, and there's still a ton of empty seats. We saw it at Bristol with the end zones, basically, in the corners being completely closed off, and the place still looked empty in the sections that were open. So it's trying to figure out where do you find the new fans, and then also too, how do you keep these fans that are around? And you know, if you're making these changes with the cars, with the idea of getting new fans and bringing people back, what is the applicable or the appropriate timeline to say, hey, look, you know, we need to start seeing some results? I don't necessarily know if it's 10 races in. I don't think so. I think that's way too early because we're not even a third of the way through the season yet. But at some point, where do you start to look at and say, you know, fan response has not been what we want it to be? Is that halfway through the season? Is that at the end of the season? Like I said, it's too early now, but I don't know when it starts to be not too early.
What am I missing here? Because, you know, I talk to fans every day, and I got a producer, you know, who's not, you know, much into NASCAR, but he's in at least intrigued by it. But I think he remembers NASCAR going back to days where, you know, even 12, 15 years ago where, you know, there's bumping and, you know, it's people pissing off each other and, you know, them settling it one way or the other, either on the track or in the pits. And it's gone almost corporate, man, where things have kind of turned from the way the sport used to be. And I get it, maybe they're trying to sell it, and I understand that because it hasn't been that sellable over the last few years. But when people come and ask you, or they even ask me, hey, man, why don't they just go back to the old days, get rid of some of these dumb rules and let them just go out and race? What's your response to something like that?
I think that there is, again, here's another one of those double-edged swords where NASCAR is closer than ever in terms of the speeds on the track, yeah, and in terms of, you know, where the intervals on a practice sheet, the intervals in qualifying, they're closer than ever. That being said, you know, we've learned that closer doesn't always necessarily lead to more parity and more competition because the fast cars get out front and they can't be passed because then everybody's going the same speed. They can't pass. And I think that has a lot to do with people looking at this and saying, you know, hey, I want them to change the rules. Because, you know, you hear drivers talk about dirty air all the time, and that's a big thing in the fact that if you've got a car that may be just slightly faster than the guy ahead of you because the competition's so close, you need something to counteract that dirty air to actually make the pass and not be stuck behind him. And to use Bristol as a very good example, I think the racing at Bristol has been perfectly fine. I realize the track debacle in terms of repaving the track and the way that the racing completely changed. Right. I understand and I recognize that turned off a lot of longtime fans, and I think you can draw a line from what had been done to the track to the attendance decline at Bristol after that. I understand that. That being said, I think the racing in terms of fighting the multiple grooves, that's entertaining, but it's clearly not everybody's cup of tea. The people who grew up with, you know, or became NASCAR fans in the 1990s when Dale Earnhardt and Terry Labonte were bumping fenders and people were bumping each other out of the way for the win because the low groove was the only way around the racetrack. That became the established type of racing at Bristol, and that's the racing that everybody liked. And so it's we're humans. It's hard for us to adapt to things at times. And while the racing at Bristol now is good, I think it is a different type of good. And two things can be good, but there's a lot of people who don't necessarily like two things. They prefer one good over the other good.
Let's cut out the, you know, the journalist talk between me and you. What do they got to do to get this damn thing back? Because it's going down a path right now, Nick, and I think me and you both understand this. And after talking, you know, with folks around a certain team, it's tough. I mean, there's not a quick and easy fix, and I think we both get that. But there's got to be something a little bit more standard that they can do, because a lot of these people don't know anything that we're talking about when it comes to, you know, packages and aero packages and wind tunnels and all that good stuff. A lot of people just don't know it because they haven't been educated on it. But what's something that could be done in the next 2 to 3 years to try to garner this support out, man? Is it newer drivers, younger drivers winning races? Is it feuds? Is it, you know, them lacking on some of these stupid rules? I mean, there's got to be something that can be done.
I think it's pretty obvious. That being said, I don't necessarily know what the best way to do it. And that is, let me start off by saying this.
Yeah.
I do not believe in any shape or form that NASCAR is dying. I believe that NASCAR is in the midst of a much needed and overdue downsizing period, especially over the last 5 years.
Agreed.
Because as you and I both know, speed takes money, yeah, and you've got to figure out in an era where corporate revenue in terms of sponsorships are down across the board, whether it's on the team level, it's on the series level, because we all know how much less Monster is paying than Sprint was paying. You've got to figure out a way to curb costs. They've tried that a little bit with the roster rules, saying you can only have X number of crew guys travel to a racetrack each week. They cut one pit crew member off the teams heading in to 2019, not necessarily sure, or 2018, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not necessarily sure that's cut a bunch of money off of teams' budgets. But anyway, I don't know if it's a spending cap. I don't know how you would enforce a spending cap. Formula One is going to try a spending cap, and they're easing it in the next few years in a bid basically to try to bring the lower teams up a little bit closer to the Ferrari and Mercedes and Red Bull level. And I think you're seeing the Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull thing happening in NASCAR on a scale right now, especially with Joe Gibbs Racing and Team Penske. I mean, we've never gone so far into a season in NASCAR history with two teams winning the first nine races of the year. And so you have to, it's got to be some sort of, there's people who are much smarter than I am when it comes to this stuff, of recognizing that there is an issue when it comes to the value of NASCAR franchises and the value of a sponsorship relative to the expenditures that are associated with. Andrew Manus, who does a bunch of data analytics stuff in the NASCAR world, posted a graph earlier this week on Twitter, and it showed the valuations by Forbes of franchises all in multiple sports, including MLS, and NASCAR teams were included on that graph. NASCAR teams were the only ones on the graph that did not have a nice little left or upward trajectory to the right as years went on.
Jesus.
You're looking at NASCAR team values being stable or even down a little bit because of the corporate environment and teams cutting back on sponsorships. I mean, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, it wasn't a big deal. If you signed a three-race sponsor, great, that's awesome.
Right.
You know, now a three-race sponsor is fantastic news because you're filling probably three races of maybe 18 or 20 that you don't have unsold. And you're selling sponsorships at a lower rate. And I think a perfect example of this whole situation is Marcus Lemonis, the CEO of Gander Outdoors and Camping World. They switched the truck series from Camping World to Gander Outdoors. And he has been a fantastic sponsor for NASCAR. I mean, he clearly values his investment in the truck series. And you see Gander Outdoors and you see the Camping World, you've seen them buy up sponsorships that go unsold at tracks for races. I believe they're sponsoring the Dover race here coming up in the next couple weeks.
Yep.
But the reason he goes in and sponsors these races is because tracks don't get what they want to begin with. He's admitted this publicly. You know, I wait, realize that there could be an undervalued asset here. I come in and get it on the cheap. That's a heck of a business strategy for him. I mean, that's the way you want to do business.
Yeah.
I cannot fault him absolutely at all for doing that. That being said, it's a symptom of the problem when you're going to need Marcus Lemonis to get a cut-rate deal to rescue you, to have a sponsor because you could not get what you wanted from any other company out there.
God, it makes sense when it comes to the dollars and everything that's being spent, and NASCAR's trying to sell as well. You know, I think a lot of people don't understand or maybe know this stuff too when it comes to teams spending money. Like even the small things, Nick, like pit crews, they don't fly in till the day of the race. Usually these motorsports teams like Gibbs and Hendricks and whatnot, Ganassi, they have planes, you know, that they, you know, and this is kind of a behind the scenes that maybe fans don't know, but they have, you know, planes that they fly in, you know, 10 to 12 members of on race day. And you have different teams at the track compared to who comes in on a Sunday. You know, then they all fly out after, you know, on Sunday after the race. You know, everybody in NASCAR loves to say the best race of the day is the race to the airport after the race. And
exactly.
Right. It almost blows my mind a little bit that, you know, there's not behind the scenes stuff that would get people more intrigued. And a lot of people don't know these teams. Like we both come at this from a media standpoint where we want information, we want to know, we love the behind the scenes stuff. It attracts more people. You know, I had a conversation last week, you know, with somebody on Twitter, and I said, hey, you know, if somebody wants a real look at what NASCAR is and their first time there and they're excited, sell them a cheap hot pass and let those people go around the garages and enjoy everything. And then what you've done is you've built up somebody, hopefully, a fan for life because they get to see the inner workings and not just sit in the stands. And I think that's what's tough as well, the type of money that they're trying to charge for these certain events, Nick. You know, and Bowyer blew it up, you know, Bristol weekend when he was calling around hotels. God love Clint Bowyer. I love that man to death. He's as crazy as can be. But he's calling up hotels and, you know, it's $300 a night and, you know, and it's tough for fans to come and spend that type of money. Then on tickets as well, you know, when are they going to have to look at themselves in the face and realize they have a lot of stuff to do to sell this product more than just coming on Race Hub or NASCAR America, you know, every night. They've got to do more, Nick.
You know, I'm glad you brought the Boyer thing up, and I'm glad you recognized that too, because, and I understand Clint's frustration. I get it. I think it's a discussion worth having. That being said, I think what we have to immediately point to first is 15 years ago, people had no problem paying those rates at Bristol area hotels.
Great point.
Like, I do not think, and this, I'm just spitballing here, but I'm guessing that hotel room prices, because there's such a limited supply in that area, have either not gone along with inflation levels from the last 15 years, or they have gone up with those levels. I doubt that they have increased higher than inflation. So hotel prices become an easy scapegoat. The bigger question to ask in the grand scheme of things is, what has happened to lessen, you know, supply? We all love capitalism when we want to, right? Yeah. You know, and, you know, supply and demand is peak American capitalism. You can charge more when there are more people that want to buy your product. Well, you know, that's simply going to always be a factor at Bristol and Johnson City, because you have so few hotel rooms and you have a track that seats 160,000 people. It's not a metro area that's going to draw a bunch of locals and fill the track up. You're going to need people from out of state and out of the area. So these hotels are going to be able to charge $200 and $300 a night. What has changed with the product that has made people not want to come to the track? And I give NASCAR tracks credit for offering up ticket prices and ticket specials. And I think, again, I'll drop Dover here. I think Dover is doing a deal along the lines of $50, buy a ticket, get a scanner, some type of deal like that. Those are the type of packages, in my opinion, that I think you have to start really using to appeal to fans. You know, kids can come free now to Xfinity and Truck Series races. But I always tell people, you know, you can go to a NASCAR race, especially if you're a newbie. You know, you can take a newbie to a NASCAR race and get them to experience it all. But you have to not only have the ticket, and so, you know, we have cheap ticket prices, $40. Okay, great. You're not going to get the full experience. You can go to a baseball game and watch it and understand what's going on without buying anything but your ticket. You don't have to have a beer. You don't have to have a hot dog necessarily.
Absolutely.
At NASCAR, you're bringing somebody to understand the race. You want to buy them the scanner. The scanner rental price, that's going to maybe potentially double the price of your ticket. You want to make sure you have headphones, whether you bring your own or rent them at the track as well. You have to have the fan vision. You got to have something to stay engaged and keep track of the race, because if you're watching the race in the stands and you see, you know, your favorite driver slowing down, well, you want to know what happened to your favorite driver slowing down. Why, you know, otherwise you're just like, well, he's out of the race now. I wish I knew what happened. You want that scanner. It's the extra add-ons that make these cheap tickets in the end not so cheap, because that's part of the fan experience. You want the really good fan experience. You got to be able to listen to these guys on their radio talk back and forth.
That's the best thing that I enjoy, Nick. When I'm at home and I can't travel to go see Bubba race, I fire up the app and I just listen to him and Freddie Kraft going back and forth and his crew chief. And it's some of the most it makes NASCAR fun, because you're hearing these point-blank conversations. And trust me, they're not the best ones in the world. When you're listening to in-car audio, it gets pretty heated. And it makes it even more enjoyable than it normally would be. And I agree with you on that, too, because when you go to these tracks – they're trying to sell you scanners. They're trying to sell you headphones anywhere and everywhere. But if you do something like Dover does, then that's a smart way to try to attract more fans, or at least try to sell some tickets. And, you know, that's one of the things NASCAR did well, is allow on their app, you know, for you to be able to sit at home in Knoxville, Tennessee, and me be able to listen to the in-car audio of my cousin who's racing in Richmond. You know what I mean? So I get what they're trying to do with technology, and that's smart. Let's kind of move on a little bit before we got to get you out of here. A couple more questions. And when we look at something like Nashville and them trying to, you know, there was, what was it, 3 months ago, you had all the drivers kind of come, well, not all of them, but you had six, seven, eight drivers you know, start coming together and talking about, let's go back to these old school tracks, you know, let's do this and that. The Nashville thing got brought up. You had Dell Jr. started off, then you had Chase, and you had Bubba, then you had, you know, Blaney. In your mind, what NASCAR tried in Nashville once, and now they've got a track out there that's being sold. You know, it's already sold to some developmental group. They're going to put a huge warehouse on there. What has to be done to actually bring NASCAR to the Fairground Speedway, besides adding 15,000 seats and improving some damn restrooms?
I think some perspective needs to be had by all parties involved here. I know I briefly mentioned this when we were ending last week.
Yeah.
I think this has been absolutely, the more and more you read, the more and more it looks worse for Speedway Motorsports, Inc. And, you know, right now, and this goes back to the roots of our conversation that we were having at the moment, if you are Nashville and you have aged out, for lack of a better term, of being a NASCAR town, and this is a town where, you know, it's getting population growth from all over. This is not simply just an organic population boom of people from in city multiplying. Nashville is drawing in residents from all over. The MLS, Major League Soccer, is the more attractive long-term play than rehabbing a short track with public money, especially with the way that people view public money being used for sports venues, the evolving attitude there. It's a much more attractive play than NASCAR, especially when, as you said, the mixed-use development, some of the stuff is supposed to open in August, and it's literally right next to the racetrack.
Right.
I mean, how do you, when you're Speedway Motorsports, Inc., and they say, you know, hey, we're hoping for a plan, we want to share it, we want to get involved, well, you know, how does this new plan incorporate the mixed-use development and the MLS stadium and the parking issues that come with it, the infrastructure issues as well? And, you know, you're essentially doing this without any guarantee unless you have a behind-the-scenes deal from NASCAR that you're going to get a race. It feels like the cart got 50 feet out in front of the horse here, and the horse is still in the barn, and the cart's rolling down the hill, and I'm not sure what can be done to stop it, because the tease started happening when Nashville got the NASCAR banquet in December, and there has never been any actual public plan that's feasible outside of the $54 million in money from Nashville plan that the city quickly rejected in February when it was presented to them that has seemed like it could be any type of starting point. And it almost to me feels like it was an overselling of the potential demand for NASCAR, and that it was a realization that maybe the demand that we want to exist in Nashville no longer actually exists.
And that's a good point. It makes sense. I think it would be a great thing to add back to Nashville. I think it would attract a lot of people. NASCAR, I'm not even going to say NASCAR, Nashville and the owner group, when they built that darn track years and years ago, they screwed up because they put the darn thing 35 miles outside of town. And nobody wants to go to Lebanon, you know, to watch a race, you know, when the hub of everything is downtown Nashville. I'm sorry. I mean, it's not, you know, Talladega is Talladega. Bristol, you're right there in Johnson City in Bristol. You know, Vegas, you're in Vegas. You know, there's just certain spots where you can't go 35 miles outside of town and call yourself that you want to be a Nashville Speedway. It doesn't work like that. And I think personally what Nashville has to offer, you could tell they're trying to make strides to get there, but I still think it's a long way off. And speaking of kind of short tracks, and we'll leave it at this here in just a minute, I've always wondered this. You see drivers like Kyle Busch run the snowball. You know, you've seen Chase Elliott do it in the past. You see Denny go back to I think it was up in his short track, wherever he's, I forgot where he's from, Virginia. And you see him run some of these races. When is it going to become a time where, if you're going to spread the word a little bit, or you're going to get back out in the community and you're going to embrace your NASCAR and your racing community, when's it time for NASCAR to start sending some of their drivers and run some of these races all around the country, short track scenes, do something different, pop up races in the sense of, hey, we're going to let a NASCAR driver go race here and here. You know, we'll pay him a certain amount. You know, when do you do it's? I don't want to connect it to like independent wrestling, okay? But also, there is ways you can go out and connect with these fan bases. You know, I want to say during the week maybe, or during an off season, where you can get them more involved. Is there? Do you see anything like that You know, because Pensacola and the Snowball Derby is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, no, and you just think about how Tony Stewart was relevant during his driving career, and he's still relevant now because he's going around the country still driving sprint cars.
Agreed.
Kyle Larson doing
yes.
the same thing when he's spending his holidays over in New Zealand and Australia racing. And it's not organic if you sit there and say, hey, you know, we would strongly encourage you, NASCAR drivers, to start showing up at the local racetracks. But, you know, maybe shortening the schedule is part of that because you can end up with fewer races on the schedule. These guys have more time to go barnstorm and create the local short track stuff. Because not only is it beneficial where you may potentially create a new fan for yourself by shaking a kid's hand at a local short track one evening, but you're also supporting the local short tracks that need the help. Because wherever we're going back, weeks and weeks, you want more short tracks on the schedule, you need to go support the short tracks.
Right.
Well, you know, support your local Saturday night short track. Well, you know, you're going to, a casual fan who may not necessarily go to a short track race all the time is going to be more inclined to head out to his or her local short track if Tony Stewart or Denny Hamlin or Kyle Busch or somebody is racing out there. So, you know, right, get them in front like it was in the 70s and 80s. Get them, you know, racing at the grassroots level and then working up. And also, too, I think this also, dare I say it, goes back to the problem with the NASCAR talent developmental cycle in that we have, this is a series that has gotten away from finding the best drivers to put in the best teams because they are the best drivers.
Right.
You have to still be able to drive, don't get me wrong, but we've reached the point where corporate funding or personal funding, wherever you're getting your money, having that money is as important or maybe even more important than your actual ability to drive a car and win races.
What a great discussion today, and I go back and think about it on the way out. My uncle and cousin, not Bubba, they went to the World of Outlaws, and they said that was the funnest thing they've been to in a very long time when it comes to racing. So there's things to learn in different types of racing around the country that I think NASCAR could get a lot better at, and discussions like these need to happen. Where fans can hear it. So, Nick Bromberg, I appreciate you joining. This is a great conversation, man. Tell everybody where they can follow you. We're going to have this interview posted up. I'll get it sent over to you. I think this discussion needed to be had.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic one. And then what Yahoo Sports, sports.yahoo.com, we will have some. I'm going to be watching the Talladega race on Sunday with open eyes and open ears because is basically this weekend is going to be the first test of the post-restrictor plate era. I realize these cars still have tapered spacers, but this is going to be completely different than the previous rules they had used at Talladega over the last 10, 12 years. So it'll be interesting to see if the cars draft the same. Will the tandem draft come back in some type of capacity? No one really knows what this race is going to be like on Sunday, which means it'll be one of two extremes. It'll be either super tame, and we'll have a single file follow leader, or it'll just be absolutely bonkers crazy, and no one will have any idea what will happen until the final lap.
Can't wait for it, Nick. Have a great week, buddy. Enjoy the race on Sunday. We'll talk next.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, buddy. Nick Bromberg, Yahoo Sports. I got to take a break. We're going to post this interview up real soon. That was fantastic. We needed to have that discussion. It's optional, Fox Sports Knoxville.